From Jersey Shore to Erie, Harrisburg to Countersport, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Governor Tom Wolf delivered his annual budget address this past week. Once again, he called for more spending and higher taxes. David Taylor, Matt Briette, and Rebecca Euler have a Capitol Watch look at the details. And the Iowa caucus was a disaster. Could all the changes to Pennsylvania's election laws cause an election meltdown here? I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to David Taylor and our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania was once again in the national spotlight this past week as Vice President Mike Pence made appearances at a school choice event in Philadelphia and fired up the faithful at a Women for Trump event near Harrisburg. Meanwhile, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg held a campaign event in Philadelphia just prior to the president's State of the Union address on Tuesday. Pennsylvania voters will have to wait a long time to weigh in on the presidential race, as our primary is not until the fourth Tuesday of April. A bill designed to further encourage development of Pennsylvania's energy sector passed both the State House and State Senate with bipartisan support this past week. It now awaits Governor Tom Wolf's signature. The Energize PA initiative would encourage economic growth through tax credit incentives. House Speaker Mike Terzai, a co-sponsor of the bill, said it would have a similar impact to one passed in 2013 that paved the way for construction of the Shell cracker plant in Beaver County. Currently, 7,000 skilled craftsmen are building that plant, which is the largest construction site in North America. And three corrections officers in the Huntington area are suing the Pennsylvania State Correction Officers Association, claiming the union broke its own rules in making $20,000 in financial transactions. The suit alleges sloppy accounting and misuse of funds. The goal of the legal action is an effort to determine exactly what happened to that money. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Governor Tom Wolf delivered his sixth state budget address last Tuesday and outlined a tax and spend agenda that has largely been rejected by the General Assembly in each of the past 5 years. It likely won't go anywhere again this year. Here to take a look at the details are our Capitol Watch crew, Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs, Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business, and host David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, my all-star squad, Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Rebecca, thanks for being here.
Great to be here again, David. Thank you.
And as ever, my main man, Matt Briette, CEO of Commonwealth Partners, the Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, thanks for being on the show.
Good to be with both of you.
Well, it was a landmark week in the legislative year in Harrisburg, that the first Tuesday of February arrived, and His Excellency the Governor went to the well of the House to have a address a joint session of the General Assembly with his budget proposal for 2020-2021, and it was deja vu all over again. It seemed as though he marched out every last one of his proposals from previous years that have already been rejected. So I
guess
deja
vu is the right term, because we weren't on Groundhog Day, because the movie Groundhog Day would have also been fitting.
Yes.
Just a few days off from that holiday, I guess.
But it's, you know, I mean, on the one hand, it's, you know, you have to you have to admire his consistency, his determination that he wants higher taxes and bigger government. And he sure wants it. He's undeterred by reality.
Well, that is for sure. I mean, what the governor laid out is a spending increase of over 6% nearly triple the rate of inflation. And so he's asking big, I guess, as he is riding the wave of the Trump economy and the boom economy there, thinks that we can blow the doors off of the spending. And he wants to borrow more, tax more, and spend more. And that's essentially what he laid out. And there was nothing that he didn't touch on that he didn't think government could do better than private enterprise. And so he banged that drum once again.
Rebecca, what were your takeaways?
Well, it's like you said, it's sort of the same old stuff over again. This is the sixth year he's proposed a minimum wage increase. And I believe it's also the sixth year he proposed a severance tax on natural gas.
It's a new additional tax on top of the existing taxes, including the impact fee.
Right. And that particular proposal was a rehash of last year's Restore PA proposal, which would be a $4.5 billion bond issue. So, is like we said, more tax and spend, more borrowing. And I thought it was interesting the governor said that it didn't include any tax increases, but yet that borrowing, which I think in total amounted to about $5 billion, is actually a tax on our children.
Well, yeah, because what he proposed there is $4.5 billion in borrowing that he could spend today, but then our kids and grandkids are going to have to pay off at about double that amount over the next 30 years. Unfortunately, this is the governor that we've had since he came into office in 2015. Of course, he had a reality smack upside the head that year. And so he's going at these things a little bit differently because some of them are just packaged differently. As he pushes for the severance tax, he said, oh, it's going to go to fund infrastructure. So trying to buy off folks with some of his plans here, I guess.
Not only that, but that money that he's been touting for the Restore PA proposal, which is what we're talking about here, which would be funded by a tax on natural gas, that money has been promised probably three or four times over.
Yes.
As he's traveled across
probably
the state.
Probably an understatement of how many times.
at least, yeah. So it's going to, you know, rural broadband, it's going to infrastructure improvements and going to environmental programs, to parks, to recreation. You know, it's been promised over so many times, and it's just not really believable
at
this
point.
It's
magic beans,
that's right, yeah.
Well, I mean, and one of the things that was different in this year's budget address from previous incarnations was the governor has declared all-out war on charter schools, especially virtual schools. And I thought that was really striking. He said a lot of, I have to say, deeply dishonest things, misrepresenting the way that those schools serve Pennsylvania students and families. But you know, it was as though it came straight from the teacher union bosses.
Yeah, and the demand for more and more in public education, you know, always is a great soundbite, and nobody's against that. But the reality is that we've been pumping a ton of taxpayer money into our public schools. We are in the top 10 by every measurement. In fact, just over the last 5 years, we've increased spending annually by $2.4 billion. And in this proposal, he wants more money to the schools. But at the same time, as you know, David, he's essentially saying we want less money to kids because he wants to fund systems rather than children by taking away from the schools that children are actually choosing to go to. And that's the only way that they get paid is when they actually serve children.
Yeah. And that really is what bothers me, is that you've got two different philosophies, the one being that more is always more and better, and the other is that we are going to put you on a path to starvation, that we're going to take as much as possible to just keep you on the thinnest possible bandwidth. Like, well, why should we treat different public schools? I mean, already the existing zip code-based physical public schools whose students go to one of these public charter schools, those physical zip code based schools still get to keep a big chunk of the money for the students who are no longer there.
Well, unfortunately, the governor had a prop at his budget address, the Allentown superintendent, who's been one of the biggest complainers about kids being able to make choices. And he talks about charter schools costing him money. And the only reason that he loses any students is because the product he's providing isn't up to the standards of the parents' choosing. And so every time a child leaves, he actually doesn't take, he or she doesn't take the full amount that's allocated for that child. So this superintendent is losing kids because the product he provides isn't sufficient, doesn't lose all of the money, but is complaining about the money that he loses for a kid he no longer has to educate. And so Governor Wolf, taking a, you know, a page out of the teacher union, one of his biggest funders' playbooks, you know, is proposed cutting hundreds of millions of dollars for these kids that are seeking alternatives, and while and at the same time boosting what are some of the highest per pupil expenditures in the country. Today, we're spending over $17,500 per kid. That's more than $3,900 above the national average in Pennsylvania. And yet they keep complaining that we're underfunding public schools. And the governor also, you know, said, oh, we need to borrow over $1 billion to get lead and asbestos out of our schools. Now, those are things that absolutely need to be done. But we're giving more than enough money to remediate
and have,
those problems.
And have been for a long, long time. It's like, how did it come to be that the system is so dysfunctional that they can't take care of the physical plant in their buildings so that they're not actively dangerous to the people inside of them? You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania and Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners. So, Rebecca, what were some of the other headline issues that that struck your attention?
Well, the other thing I wanted to talk about is the inability for the governor to address cost drivers in the budget. And this is – we're back to square one again with this budget in that area because – the governor has already spent almost, I believe it was $900 million more in this current fiscal year.
And that's a really important point.
Than the legislature authorized him to spend. So you would think that, you know, that the legislature gives you a certain amount of money to spend as a governor and you stick to that budget and then you come back and say, okay, well, I've spent that much this year. I'm asking for this much for next year. But no, he's gone more, almost $1 billion above budget.
That's exactly right. And Rebecca, correct me if I'm wrong, he wants that to be the new baseline.
Yes,
so he spends
exactly
beyond what was authorized last year in the budget. He, you know, porks it out however far and wants that to be the new starting place for building on more spending.
Right. So it's a cascading impact that keeps building. And $500 million of that $900 million is in the Department of Health and Human Services. And that is a 4% growth in that department just in this fiscal year from the overspend. So you're right. From this point forward, he's proposing to take what was spent this year, including the overspend, and increase it next year. And I actually sat down and looked at the numbers. And DHS is a huge cost driver for the budget, the Department of Health and Human Services, and the governor refuses to consider any proposals that would contain those costs. And I know we've talked about
some
of those.
Requirements, yeah, right, for able-bodied adults, those types of things.
Exactly, right. Well, the Department of Health and Human Services is now 40% of the state budget.
Right.
And
it's actually the largest – that department, and this is weird, it's the largest state agency of any state government in America, Pennsylvania's Department of Human Services, because we have anything that is Medicaid-related under that one heading. And yeah, it's enormous.
I didn't know that, but I did look at the numbers from last year, and I noticed that this is the first year that DHS expenditure is proposed to take up a larger percentage of the budget than the Department of Education for the first time, which last year the Department of Education was about 40%. This year, DHS will be 40% if the governor's proposal goes forward.
When you add in all of the federal spending, I mean, it blows the doors off, you know, because the one thing that we don't talk about in Harrisburg a whole lot is the total operating budget.
Correct.
We always talk about the general fund budget, which is where the governor puts his focus, which is, you know, his proposal is $36.1 billion. But at the end of the day, if he gets his way, we're spending over $89.3 billion in total funding, where a lot of that, what we call the offline or the shadow budget, is a lot of more with that welfare spending that's going on. There's one that I would commend the governor for talking about abolishing, and it's called the Horse Race Development Fund. This was money that was supposed to be, as we were promised under Governor Ed Rendell, money from gambling that would provide for property tax relief. But this has been subsidizing horse races. And in fact, we've even seen that this has subsidized princes in Saudi Arabia.
Yes, it goes to sweeten the pot for race money prizes that are then won by people not only from out of state but from overseas. That's
right. And so at least the governor said, hey, let's abolish that. But he said, well, we want to put it into higher education. While I think that would probably be a better use of resources, I would propose that it actually go to the property tax owners as they were promised under the expansion of gambling. But at least he's focusing on some of these funds that we ought not to be funding and shining light on things that are kind of on automatic pilot. I know that Representative Seth Grove has a bill that would consolidate, I believe, 17 different funds, mm-hmm. bring them back into the general fund mm-hmm. budget so that it would be under the control of the legislature. These are some of the reforms that I think would provide greater transparency and some truth in spending, right? I mean, we need to know, where is all of this money going? How are we spending the lottery fund or the motor license fund, and have some accountability in that spending?
Yeah. And certainly one of the things that happened over time, that the Pennsylvania State Police, instead of being funded primarily out of the general fund budget with some supplement from the motor vehicle license fund, now the majority, I think it's like 2/3 of the state police operations, are being funded out of the motor vehicle license fund, which of course is supposed to be for, you know, roads and infrastructure, and that is something that over time we're going to need to fix, because again, I mean, that one of the things that's actually good about Pennsylvania state government when it comes to the motor vehicle license fund, that gas taxes, the fuels taxes go into that fund, and that those dollars can only be spent on certain discrete purposes, as opposed to, say, California, which said, hey, our roads are awful, we need a higher gas tax. The gas tax goes into the general fund and then it gets spent on a bunch of other stuff.
Well, this is where I think we need to have an overhaul of tax policy, and that we tie the taxes to the government that people use. And I think that's where I think we would all agree that government's role in our infrastructure, that if we tie those taxes or fees directly to the government service we're using, that's a good tax policy. And so we need to do more of that instead of these types of things where we tax this to pay for that and there is no real connection. And I think, unfortunately, Governor Wolf is proposing these types of things, right? Tax natural gas and spend it 36 different ways, as Rebecca was talking about. We've promised it for everything from education to infrastructure to healthcare. That's just bad tax policy making.
But I think these taxes and fees, because when we talk about special funds, we're also talking about fees on certain populations too. Those taxes and fees are sort of death by a thousand cuts, because that's what really harms, you know, our job creators and our the people in our economy who really need to get things done.
Right.
And like you said, Matt, those taxes and those fees are not necessarily transparent, but they are transparent to the person who's paying them, yeah, because they get a bill every year, every 2 years, for those fees. And I think looking holistically at the whole budget and what all these costs are, what the cost drivers are, and sort of getting our arms around the whole thing and understanding what is impacting those businesses, those job creators, those individuals who are trying to make a living at their profession, those sorts of analyses, I think, really do need to be done.
And Rebecca, it goes back to one of the foundational facts, one of the baseline facts of Pennsylvania's economy. Our small business startup rate is terrifyingly low.
Yes.
And that is a danger sign for the whole economy, that people aren't willing to take that leap.
Right. And it has to do with a lot of those taxes and fees and regulatory burden that the businesses have to deal with every day. And those taxes and fees to go into a lot of these special funds. And there's never really any public debate over, you know, the costs involved or how the money's spent. So more transparency is definitely the way to go.
Well, and that's where, you know, when we talk about, say, our personal income tax, we say, oh, it's 3.07%. It's flat across the board. We always forget wait, there's another 1% at the local level that we're all paying.
Which then, most states also, don't have.
Right.
Which,
and then when you add all these things up, it's why Pennsylvania's state and local tax burden is 15th highest in the country, because it's that nickel-diming death by a thousand taxes and fees.
So the governor had his big day. He got to address the joint session and all that stuff. I guess the hard work actually begins now for the legislature, that we'll have weeks of budget hearings. Just quickly, what kind of response did you hear from legislators following the governor's address?
Well, I think we heard a good one that pushed back against this dramatic increase in spending, taxing, and borrowing. And I hope that that we all see a good fight against this governor's ways, because it has been their thwarting of his taxing, borrowing, and spending that has allowed Pennsylvania to grow and not recede as it would have if they'd have capitulated.
Yeah, I agree with that. A lot of the statements I heard after the governor's budget address were, it was clear that many lawmakers understand that how we got to where we are in our economy doing really well today with virtual full employment was by keeping taxes low, by living within our means, curbing spending, and at the federal level, the tax cuts and regulatory reform. So these are the keys to economic prosperity. And I think that a lot of the lawmakers in our state understand that. So I think the governor is going to get a lot of pushback.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch. And as ever, we ask you, the listeners, to stick with us, that we'll be here all year to revisit these issues and let you know what's happening in Sin City, Harrisburg, PA. Well, that's all the time we have. Rebecca, where can the listeners go to learn more about you and your organization and the things that you're doing?
Sure. They can find us at nfib.com/PA. Or on Facebook or Twitter.
Matt?
Go to thecommonwealthpartners.com.
Thanks so much. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on Sunday mornings at 8:30 on the Pennsylvania Cable Network with PMA Perspective. From Rebecca, Matt, and me, thanks very much for listening. We'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. The ballrooms were rented, the stages festooned with red, white, and blue. Hundreds of supporters gathered, anxiously awaiting results and hoping their candidate would take to the podium to give a victory speech. But there were no victory speeches or concession speeches because there were no results. The much-touted new technology used by the Iowa Democrat Party to tabulate caucus results failed, and inconsistencies were found as numbers were checked against a paper trail. So began the 2020 presidential election. The chaos that engulfed the Iowa caucus may be a preview of what Pennsylvanians can expect as most counties roll out new voting machines and a wide range of election reforms are implemented in a high-turnout, high-profile election year. Kathy Buchvar is Pennsylvania's Secretary of State. That department oversees voter registration and elections in Pennsylvania. She spoke recently to the Pennsylvania Press Club explaining the election changes approved by the General Assembly last year. During her remarks, she admitted the obvious. State and county election officials face a difficult task implementing the new rules. All of this is made more difficult due to the fact presidential elections generate the highest voter turnout in the four-year cycle. Rather than phase in the new procedures and new technology in an off-year election, everything will now happen at one time in a high-turnout election. The Wolf administration was heavy-handed in forcing most counties to replace their voting machines, mandating that all systems must have a paper trail in addition to any electronic component. Donald Trump's 2016 victory in Pennsylvania, which Democrats are convinced is illegitimate, has caused them to fixate on election security. While we all want our elections to be secure and free of fraud, virtually every reform being implemented actually increases the opportunity for tampering. The handful of counties that rolled out new voting systems in last November's elections had problems that resulted in delays, late counts, and a likely undervote as voters walked away from polls when equipment malfunctioned. York County was the poster child for what could and did go wrong. Officials there further eroded voter confidence in the system by hiring a new elections director who has zero experience in the field. He managed to accomplish the unique feat of unifying Republicans and Democrats who all blasted his appointment. Setting aside the already proven problems of implementing new voting systems, process changes designed to improve voter participation open new avenues for fraud. Among the changes is no-excuse absentee balloting. In years past, a voter had to be out of town or ill to qualify to cast an absentee ballot. Now there is no-excuse absentee balloting, which is a de facto vote-by-mail process. Adding administrative complexity to the process, those ballots will now be accepted up until the close of polls on Election Day. County election bureaus will also have to deal with a new voter registration deadline. Previously, new voters had to register by 30 days prior to the election. That window has been shortened to 15 days prior to the election. Thus, the administrative process of updating the voter rolls in time for materials to be packaged and sent to the precincts is significantly less. Having more eligible voters actually voting is a noble goal, and the election law changes may ultimately accomplish that goal. But every change brings with it not only administrative challenges, but also vote security challenges. Doing this in a high turnout election year is folly. Although the genesis of these changes and the mandate for new machines came from the left, even left-leaning interest groups have voiced concerns over the implementation of these changes. Their concern is valid and proves that fears over election chaos and fraud is not just some right-wing conspiracy theory. The good news is elections are implemented by 67 county election bureaus, which are largely staffed by highly competent, hardworking individuals. But they have been given a tremendously difficult task to accomplish and a set of tight deadlines in which to do so. They will do their best, but if the Iowa caucus was prologue, the voters of Penns Woods may also face a long election count in April and November. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. And we have more details on the upcoming 2020 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. The Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is the premier gathering of grassroots conservatives every year here in the Keystone State. This year's conference will be March 27th and 28th at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. Fox News contributor Jason Chaffetz will be the featured dinner speaker, along with former U.S. Senator Rick Santorum and Brent Bozell from the Media Research Center. There will be additional speakers, panel presentations, workshops, and networking. For complete information and to register for the 2020 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, go to paleadershipconference.org. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WBFD-AM in Bedford, along with WHLM-AM and FM in Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal, plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.